Well, if you've ever wanted to see what a CIA-backed coup and color revolution looks like in action, we're clearly witnessing it all over again right now in Venezuela, where the democratically elected government of Nicolas Maduro just won re-election. The CIA-backed opposition failed miserably, but that's not stopping the Biden administration and corporate media from doing everything they can right now to discredit that election and push for a civil war, which I don't know that they understand fully what's about to happen and what would happen to the United States if a civil war unfolds. And Elon Musk is even getting in on the action right now, pushing for a civil war. Journalist Anya Parampil from The Gray Zone just posted this on X a short time ago. I'll read it here. Quote, with zero knowledge of Venezuela, ex-influencers and MAGA conservatives are cheering on criminal gangs pushing for civil war in the country. Make no mistake. This is where their regime change fantasy will lead. Do people understand how disastrous this will be for Venezuela, the region, and the United States? Your leaders intentionally flooded your nation with desperate migrants before, and they're preparing to do it again. They want blood in Venezuela. Anya knows more about Venezuela than just about anyone in Western journalism. Her book is called Corporate Coup, the Failed Attempt to Overthrow Venezuelan Democracy, and specifically looked at the Trump administration's attempts at a coup. Now the Biden administration getting in on the action. Anya joins us now from The Gray Zone. Anya, welcome to the show. Glad to have you here.
My pleasure to be here, Clayton.
So you've been busy over the past 48 hours with all of what's descending into chaos in Venezuela. You know, a lot of people feel like are being played like a fiddle right now if they're watching corporate media. I, too, have seen like a lot of conservatives on social media posting about Venezuela. And they clearly are either being played or they're being willfully ignorant about what's going on here. What is your assessment of it?
I think we have various competing interests here. I think, you know, I've been a fan of Elon Musk and his way of operating X up to this point. I do genuinely feel that it's been a better platform for free speech and that the war in Gaza would not have been the same. We would have not seen it the same way in the West if not for what he allowed on X. That doesn't mean that he himself is perfect. And in this particular instance, he's decided to openly side with Maria Corina Machado, a figure that has received U.S. funding since the early 2000s, since 2002, 2003, when Chavez first took power. She was one of the leading so-called civil society activists receiving State Department funding in order to overthrow Chavismo and the Venezuelan government. She's still around in 2024, but she wasn't on the ballot this time. She was basically the muscle behind the campaign of Edmundo Gonzalez, who was a former functionary in the pre-revolution days of Venezuela. He worked in El Salvador and Venezuela's ministry there when the United States was partnering with Venezuela to run a dirty war in El Salvador and neighboring Nicaragua. So I'm willing to bet he worked closely with Trump Venezuela envoy Elliot Abrams, who was later convicted for his role of criminality in the region over Iran-Contra and is still advising the Biden administration today on Latin America. That's the candidate you have that Elon has thrown his weight behind because for some reason in Latin America, and I'm guessing it has to do with natural resource wealth, he has decided to side with Javier Milei, a figure in Argentina that is very pro-United States, pro-IMF. He's sometimes labeled as a libertarian, but I don't think any libertarian Argentine would be pegging their currency to the U.S. dollar and being so dependent on foreign banksters in order to fund their economy. And that is basically the program that Elon and others would like to see take rolled out in Venezuela under Edmundo Gonzalez. And that was the program in Venezuela before Chavez, all throughout Venezuela's history since the discovery of oil there in the 1920s. And then on the U.S. political side, the MAGA conservatives that I give them credit being very brave on Ukraine and standing up to U.S. intervention in Europe. Unfortunately, I feel they're beholden to a foreign lobby here in the United States, just as we have the Israel lobby, which is, you know, reigns supreme. We also have a very powerful expat community of Venezuelans and Cubans in Florida, which is a state that any U.S. presidential candidate seeks to win. And they play outsized influence here. They would like to use U.S. taxpayer money, and if it came down to it, U.S. troops and blood to return themselves to power in Venezuela. And unfortunately, too many U.S. political figures, even those that claim to put America first, fall for this line because they hear the word socialism and pretty much fall apart.
That's right. So over the past few days, all we've been hearing from these voices is it's a socialist country. And we, you know, clearly there are problems with this election and America needs to stand for the people of Venezuela. And they do not want to have a socialist government in charge. And we need to stand with the people who are taking to the streets. But it's clearly a they're clearly conflating two things here, and it seems like they're fabricating an entire story in order to carry out their narrative, are they not?
There are a couple points to look at here. First of all, I see a lot of people online pointing to a last-minute jump in support for Maduro that came in with the polls and comparing it to what happened in the United States during Stop the Steal when there was like a 3-day pause in counting and suddenly, you know, I went to bed on election night in 2020 thinking that Trump had won re-election and then 3 days later the result changed. That is not what happened in Venezuela. And first of all, because their elections are much easier to audit. You need an electric fingerprint scan and a physical ID in order to activate your ballot in Venezuela. You are then I know, right? And they're actually proud of that when I go to Venezuela. They're proud that they have voter ID laws that they say that makes their country safer, more secure. But for some reason, people here can't get them, according to Democrats. So you have that, and then you get a physical receipt of your ballot, which you carry into an on-site secure box, sign your name again to affirm that you oversaw that ballot drop-off. That physical ballot receipt, 54% of those ballots are automatically audited against the electric result tally in these polling sites after the vote is counted in order to assuage fears that the digital or electronic vote was tampered with. And so the opposition claims that they won some of these polling sites that the government claimed Maduro won. The National Election Council should be able to put those rumors to bed by releasing the polling data. And we can get that anytime. We should be getting that anytime soon now. But the other point is, a few years ago, you may remember in Bolivia, that same line was rolled out, that there was a last minute jump in support for Evo Morales. And that's why the election that he won in 2019, I believe, was fraudulent. But what we have to keep in mind about countries like Venezuela and Bolivia is that they don't actually operate like the United States. They have extremely rural areas where in some cases the vote count does come in very late. And those happen to typically be bastions of support for the progressive or sovereign government. In this case, Maduro, and in Bolivia's case, Evo Morales. And so at the time in Bolivia, the OAS and outside powers were able to use that last minute spike in voting in order to carry out a coup. And that was later, even the New York Times admitted that, no, that data, that polling data was correct. It just had to do with votes coming in late. That could be the case coming here in Venezuela. But even if we're not going to get into the nitty gritty discussion of vote and who won the election, the reality is that right now there are armed gangs shutting down streets in Venezuela, firing at troops, okay? At least 20 Venezuelan soldiers have been injured in the past 24 hours because armed gangs are roaming the streets attempting to overthrow the government, okay? This is what the U.S., the Democratic Party, freaked out about on January 6th when they had a shaman walking through the U.S. Capitol in Washington, D.C. and acted like that was a violent insurrection to overthrow the U.S. government when the police were there pretty much opening the doors for protesters to go inside. Is that what is happening in Venezuela? Can you imagine if MAGA had armed themselves, had shot U.S. troops, National Guard troops, and police, and put up barricades in the street around the White House to violently force the overthrow of the sitting government? That I don't even want to know what would happen in the U.S. if that took place. And so the fact that that's happening in Venezuela right now, and that's what you have people cheering on, is very concerning because the military has faced many tests of its loyalty to Maduro over the past decade. And they've never switched, even when the U.S. military was on the Colombian border threatening to invade. So I highly doubt the Venezuelan military is going to throw their weight behind these opposition figures now. And so if this violence escalates, what we're looking at is a civil war in our hemisphere. We're complaining about Venezuelan migrants now in the United States. How do we think it's going to look if there is a civil war in that country?
Right. Destabilizing countries is the number one cause. You know, when people want to complain about illegal immigrants in the United States, they never talk about the cause of it. They talk about the symptoms, right? So we go in and destabilize these Latin American countries, and then these flood of immigrants pour into the United States, and we complain about it. If you look where it starts, it's starting right here with this U.S.-backed color revolution happening in Venezuela. I guess I'll get you out of here on this, which is, you kind of touched on the oil point of this earlier, but when people say, well, why would the U.S. government want to do this? Why would they want to overthrow Maduro? They're using the socialist argument, but you mentioned oil at the heart of it. Is that what we're really looking at here, is oil and resources, the overthrowing of this government so that the United States can control its oil resources?
Yeah, that's a very key point here. When we talk about socialism, Venezuela's economy, and this is something I emphasize in the book, is vastly controlled by the private sector. Its government and the public sector are only responsible for controlling about 15 to 20% of the economy. That's not so different, actually, from statistics here in the United States. The difference is what's privatized, what's socialized in Venezuela are their oil reserves, are there gold deposits, are there vast mineral reserves? And what we're talking about here are oil reserves over double the amount that Saudi Arabia has. Venezuela has by far the largest oil reserves in the world and the largest untapped gold deposits in the world. So let's think about that. The world is changing. Russia, China, the BRICS nations are establishing a world, a financial system that is going to be less dependent on the US dollar. That's already very clear. And I'm willing to bet gold is going to play a role in that future economy. So Venezuela, I believe, will probably be invited to join BRICS this year in Russia. And the United States would much rather that gold and that oil be under the command of not Venezuelan companies doing business with U.S. companies, but U.S. companies, period. And that's the difference here. Venezuela, before the revolution, was a free-for-all for the foreign corporate U.S. and European companies to exploit the oil and all of the reserves. The IMF came there and dictated their domestic policy, didn't allow them to develop a national industry capacity. So they were very heavily dependent on oil imports for basic goods and exporting their oil. Well, Venezuela's tried to reverse that, tried to develop their own ability to build their own products, not be so dependent on imports, but that takes time. In the meantime, the U.S. has imposed these sanctions and attempted to strangle their economy because they're so dependent on these imports, but it's not working. Russia and these other countries have stepped in to support Venezuela. They were able to survive, even able to possibly, you know, Maduro, according to polls, did, even before the vote took place, have a good chance at winning this election. I don't think Americans in Washington, the people running the policy here, can really wrap their heads around the fact that he's managed to survive. And because they thought the Guaido coup or any just little push that they give would result in the collapse of his government. And the fact that it stayed this long tells me that it comes down to the military. And I don't think we want to fight a war against the Venezuelan military, not a dirty war, not a direct war. The Russian military is present in Venezuela. They have advisors. They care about their ally there. They're not going to let it go. So I would hate for World War III to come to the U.S. continent, or to the American continent, rather.
Yeah, and Vladimir Putin of Russia just congratulated Nicolas Maduro on an election victory. So that, I'm sure, sits well with Anthony Blinken and the Biden administration, or whoever is running the Biden administration at this point. Anya Parampil is the author of the book, well, a couple books on Venezuela, Corporate Coup, The Failed Attempt to Overthrow Venezuelan Democracy. Everyone should go check out that book if you want to educate yourself on Venezuela. And to all of those MAGA conservative media types out there who want to educate themselves on Venezuela, maybe you should read the book as well before jumping to conclusions. Anya, great to see you. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks, Clayton.